Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a free ebook for you to download today that you won't want to miss. It's called In Conversation with Jordan Peterson, Atheism, Christianity, and the Psychology of Belief. This special ebook was created from an unbelievable podcast with famed Canadian psychologist Jordan Peterson. And in it, you'll discover how to bring order to a chaotic world using the wisdom of the Bible. So download your free copy of In Conversation with Jordan Peterson by visiting premierinsight.org/resources. That's premierinsight.org/resources. This is a limited time offer, so make sure to do it today. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Hello and welcome along to Unbelievable. I'm Justin Brierley, here with your weekly dose of apologetics discussion and debate. Today, looking at evangelism to Muslims, and I'll be introducing my guests in a moment's time. This programme, part of Faith Explored, every Saturday here on Premier Christian Radio, aiming to help you think through the big questions around religion, science, faith, scripture, ethics, and much more besides. If you want to see all of the past programmes, do go to our website, premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. There's a vast back catalogue of shows, and many people work their way through them on the podcast, and you can subscribe to that there. You can find more features, articles, videos, and all sorts of other stuff, including, of course, links to Unbelievable, the Conference 2016 on DVD. It was shot in July at our London conference, and you can now own it on DVD and MP3 CD, or indeed download the digital version of it, which is coming as well on the website. So do go to premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable for all the links there, including, if you're on the west coast of the USA, links to our forthcoming Unbelievable Live happening in Northridge, California. More details of that later on today. Towards the end of today's program, we'll squeeze in a little bit of your feedback, plus an interview with Ben Virgo of Christian Heritage London. So listen out for that on the end of today's conversation with two people who have been reaching Muslims for Christ in London for over 20 years.
You're unbelievable.
Well, today on the programme, it's my pleasure to be joined by Jay Smith and Beth Grove. Both have been involved with the work of Fanda Apologetics, and we're going to be finding out more about their ministry and why Jay is due to be moving on back to the US very soon. Just really reflecting as well on all the work that's been done through their ministry to Muslims, especially down at Hyde Park on Speaker's Corner. And talking about the way that they engage down there, which continues to be, in the eyes of many people, a controversial way of engaging Muslims, but I think is quite fascinating. If you are a regular listener to the podcast of Unbelievable, you may remember last year I replayed a documentary on the work that has gone on down there for years now, in terms of Muslims and Christians engaging in quite high-octane debates. Going to probably maybe hear a little snatch of that a little later on in today's programme. So it's lovely to be joined for this summer edition of Unbelievable by Jay and Beth. Welcome along, guys.
Good to be here.
It's great to have you with me. So this is marking, really, what has been for you a couple of decades now of ministry in the UK, would you
Almost
say,
Almost two Jay? And a half, 24 years.
There you go. You were one of the first people I had on Unbelievable.
That's correct. When you
it
were
is.
Just fledgling,
and it, we
were
just a fledgling show. Only maybe a couple of months into the show, but less than that, even actually. You came on to debate, I think, the Islam.
Well, I'm always debating Islam.
I'm trying to remember what the specific topic was.
It was Adnan Rashid, or maybe it was Tortsis.
Maybe.
One of those fellows.
But that's going back to even before we started podcasting this program. But it's you've been in that sense a long time contributor to the program for over 10 years now, Jay. So I thought it would be fun to get you on before you went back to the US. And Beth, who's also contributed on a number of occasions, most recently, of course, at the conference itself, for Unbelievable, the conference. You had, well, we couldn't fit everyone who wanted to come to your session in, Beth. I realised, actually, when you put that session on where you were talking about Muhammad and Christ and that this is a huge issue for many people. People want to hear about this. They want to hear about how to fruitfully engage their Muslim neighbours friends, people who maybe aren't so friendly, whatever. And were you surprised at the turnout at the conference?
I knew there would be quite a big interest in it, and I was thrilled at the interest. Afterwards, we had a line of people just constantly asking for more information, and a lot of people came up to me who weren't able to get into the seminar asking to have more information from us.
I'm sure we'll have you back again, so it'll be good to do that. But let's maybe take it back to a little bit of an introduction to those who aren't familiar with either of you. Jay, you're from Canada originally.
No. America.
From America. Why did I think Canada?
Because I was born and grew up in India.
Okay, right. So you've got a strange...
I'm a Commonwealth, so I've been under your tutelage, British tutelage, for my whole life.
Okay, so but you were born and grew up a little bit in India.
Up in the Himalayas. My parents are from India, my grandparents. I'm third generation Indian.
Oh, wow. Right, okay. And then you moved to America?
I only went to America to do my studies. I've only lived, I'm 62 years old. I've lived only 10 years in America. So I'm not much of an American.
No. In that sense, you've lived a long time here in the UK.
24 years.
Yeah.
Much more British than I am American. Can't you tell by my accent?
you still got to work on
this
that
a bit,
Himalayan.
I'm telling you, I totally like this with them. If they want me, I can change if you want.
After 24 years, I would have expected a little bit more Britishness, Jay.
Yes.
But nonetheless.
I can do it, but it would embarrass you.
Let's talk about what you came over for in the first place. You felt it a calling to come to the UK.
I was asked to come here by the church, our church. They had come. There was a couple that was at Forest Gate, and every door they went on, it was a Muslim door. Mm. And every person they talked to, they were overwhelmed with the questions that the Muslims were throwing at them that they had no answer to. Mm. And this is my area of expertise. So they asked me to come here. I remember I was in Senegal, West Africa, working with in Wolof and in French. And when I got this call to come to London, I looked on the map and I said, this is not the Muslim world. This has nothing to do with Islam. It's not in that 1040 window that you expect Islam to be. But because of this growing radicalism at that time, they asked me to come. So I went to your consulate there in New York City to get my visa, which takes about a year and a half. Mm. Thinking I would have to wait a year and a half. And the first question the consulate general asked me, he says, why should we want you to come to Britain? I said, because you need me. He said, what for reason? He says, because you have a growing radicalism. This is in 1992, long before 9/11. And I said, you have a growing radicalism in London, especially, that you don't know how to deal with. I know how to deal with it. I have 2 degrees, and one in apologetics and the other in Islamics. You need my help. He looked at his watch. And he says, well, listen, if you have about 45 minutes, I'll give him your visas before you even leave. So I walked out of the consulate with the visas in hand in 45 minutes because that man there at that desk realized there's a problem here in Britain.
Isn't that an amazing story? I wonder if that could happen today, 24 years on.
Not today. No longer.
This was the early 90s, though, and what would you say things have developed a fair bit in the 24 years you've been ministering?
Yeah, I would suggest that in the early 90s, most of you didn't even know there was a radicalism. You had no idea of this growing. We did. I did, because I have had to work with it. This is my area of expertise. And I went to Speaker's Corner almost immediately. But the first thing I did, Justin, was I went into all the university campuses and I went to the Muslim meetings. I would look on the bulletin board to see when they're advertised, the ISOCs. So I went from ISOC to ISOC to ISOC at King's College, at LSE, there at SOAS, Imperial. I went to everyone. I would be the only white person in the room, certainly the only non-Muslim, and I would listen to what they were saying, and then I would raise my hand and ask damaging questions. Okay. And that started the relationship, and that's where I found the radicals. They were on campus all over Britain.
And they found you, Jay. You probably started to establish a bit of reputation for yourself.
Almost immediately. And we started, we would start a meeting at Russell Square on Wednesdays where we would actually take a subject per week, and it would start out with maybe 3 or 4, then it jumped to 10, and sometimes there would be 30 Muslims, and I would be alone with 30 Muslim students, but engaged. Mm. And it was not political dialogue. This was all theological. It all had to do with the Trinity. Mm-hmm. It had to do with the Christology of Jesus. Mm-hmm. It was the authority of Scripture. We didn't talk about Israel. Right. We didn't talk about any politics. Mm. It was all theological debate.
That's really interesting. Beth, tell us a bit about your story, because you came a slightly different route into this ministry, didn't you?
Yeah, I also did Bible college in America and then came back to England to work with refugees. So my whole start with working with Muslims was because I had a real burden to work with refugees, specifically from Turkey. Mm. And I set up home among the refugees in London and really were visiting them for a few years. until a friend told me about a debate that was happening between a Muslim and a Christian. And I didn't actually know at that time you could do debates with Muslims and Christians. I thought that was a wonderful idea, but I'd never seen anyone do this. So I went down to this debate and I saw this Christian man on a stage with Sheikh Omar Bakri Muhammad, who is one of the most radical clerics around, and was the one who he headed up the Al-Muhajirun, where a lot of ISIS fighters have come from. And he was on the stage and I saw this bearded Christian man get on the stage and then give the clearest presentation of the gospel I've ever heard, in amongst shouts of Takbir, Allahu Akbar, and all the Muslims just screaming their heads off. And when I saw that, I turned to my friend and said, who on earth is this person? Is this Christian? I want to meet these people. And she said, they go to a place called Speaker's Corner. And that's when I started going down to Speaker's Corner and started meeting real Muslims who really were quite radicalized in their faith. And certainly, even if they weren't radicalized, very traditional and really wanting to see Islam come to Britain and so on. And that's how I started engaging with that kind of Muslim.
Let's hear a little bit from that documentary that I aired again last year, because it'll just give a little sense, at least, of the kind of atmosphere that goes on down at Speaker's Corner for anyone who maybe hasn't experienced it.
Allahu Akbar! You can keep your Christianity, you can keep your backward religion, you can keep your Trinity, you can keep the three gods. We only need one God. We only need one God. Allahu Akbar!
But more was to come now, as Jay began to encourage the Christians in the crowd to do the same with the name of Jesus.
Jesus! Jesus! Jesus is Lord!
So there you go, a little taster of what the atmosphere can be like. Now, lots of people, Beth, would say, what on earth made you want to go into that kind of a lion's den, bear pit? What is it that attracted you to going down to Speaker's Corner and joining in with what Jay was doing?
I think as I walked the streets of London, I saw more and more Muslims, fully covered women, men with big beards, and just this growing Islam on the streets, and very little in the church engaging with that kind of Muslim. Mm. A lot of people reaching out to refugees and helping those in need, but these really staunch, strong Muslims, I didn't see much happening with them. And all I'd been told is make friends with Muslims. And I wanted to go further. I wanted to take my faith to Muslims. I wanted to talk about faith issues with Muslims. And I think when I went down there, I saw real faith really alive. It wasn't a faith I agreed with. I don't agree with Islam on any category, but I saw they really believed what they believed. And I thought, we Christians, we actually stand on truth. We also need to communicate with them and give them an alternative message about especially who Jesus is and who God is and so on. And I just wanted to engage with them on deep theological matters.
I mean, the group that has gone down there on a regular basis over the years, Jay, it's been a kind of an organic thing, hasn't it? And different people have come in at different times. What have you hoped to achieve in the course of having these regular engagements, often on a Sunday afternoon down at Speaker's Corner?
It's really changed. I think when we started in 1990, we were overwhelmed with the aggression. There was a lot more aggression back then. It was a lot more violent. In the 1990s, we got beat up quite a bit.
I mean, just explain what happened to you. I know that you got knocked down a few times.
My glasses were broken. You can see the scar they gave me here. It was a much more violent environment. Right. There was maybe, usually on any given Sunday, there may be 5, 6, as many as 10 Muslim speakers on 10 different ladders. Mm. So it was a completely different environment than it is now. Once 9/11 happened, everything changed.
Oh, really?
Islam no longer was a religion of violence. It was now a religion of peace. And that was the new narrative that was introduced in 2001. Islam meant peace. Salam. So that has it all happened after 9/11, especially then 7/7. When 7/7 came, July 7th, 2005, even more so, every Muslim now was a man of peace. So that has changed the atmosphere at Speaker's Corner as well.
And in that sense, has that led to more productive kind of discussions? And
absolutely. And what
there?
We're doing now, in fact, if you were to come down next Sunday, see if you can see one Muslim speaker.
Okay.
Not one.
Now, what's happened? Why has this changed so much?
We've taken them all down.
that's a grand claim.
And it's a huge claim. And I would say the reason is because our material is so much better than it was back in 1992. Okay. In 1992, we had no historical argument. Mm. We did not have any manuscript material. We did not have any of the material against Mecca or the Qibla or Muhammad. This is all new. This has all been coming out. It is starting in 1994 was when I first came across it at School of Orient and African Studies, studying under Dr. Gerald Hotting. So that has suddenly exploded. exploded since 2011, 2014, and then just this year, what's coming out now.
So just explain a little bit, if you would, Beth, what this material is that in your view, has got the Muslim debaters, kind of riled and scared a bit.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I first went to Speaker's Corner, almost every speaker was a Muslim. But now, as Jay said, there's hardly any. And I think it's because the kind of historical critique that has been applied to the Bible for the last few hundred years has now been applied to the Quran. And we, as our organization, both Hyde Park Christian Fellowship, which we're talking about now, and also FANDA, which hopefully we'll talk about later, that organization that we belong to, we're trying to get this material out to the masses, both Christian, non-Christian, and Muslim. And Muslims now are having to deal with material that is evidential, that has a lot of good research behind it, that's beginning to challenge the very foundations of Islam. And that's what we present from when we stand on ladders at Speaker's Corner. That's what we present Sunday in, Sunday out, all the way through from the historical critique right down to the life of Muhammad and what the texts actually say about who Muhammad was, and trying to, if you like, both show the Muslim world what their texts actually say, because many of them don't read it, but also the Christian and the non-believing world, what is actually in this religion.
Before we get into the detail of what these critiques are of the Quran that you guys have developed through this material, just give us an idea of how you would traditionally set up one of these debates down at the corner. You've got these mini step ladders, haven't you, which you stand on just to elevate yourself a little bit. You're not allowed any amplification. So you've got to kind of have a strong voice. And I remember when I came down there with you, Jay, this was several years ago now, you would try and set it up in a kind of, okay, I'm going to have 2 minutes, you have 2 minutes, I have, you know.
Five minutes.
So that there was some kind of, it was structured. And
those debates are going on. The problem is Muslims won't do those debates anymore.
Right.
We're just destroying them in every one of those. That's why we're having a hard time finding any Muslim that will do those kind of debates.
Okay.
So we've moved on. Well, I'll tell you what we're doing now. We're putting together, and I'll just hand this to you. It's on radio, so they can't see what I'm handing. These are these little booklets that we put out for every Sunday.
Okay.
Each booklet goes through a set of arguments, but they're all polemical. They're all on the attack. They're all on the offensive. And what we're doing is we're unpacking all the weakest areas of Islam that most people have not heard of yet. But we're starting with the Quran. Then we go to the traditions. That's the example of the Prophet Muhammad. Then we go to the four schools of law. And then we go to the exegetes. And then we finally looked at what are Muslims doing today with this material. Now, do you see what I've just done?
Yeah.
I've not said anything about Christianity. I've said nothing about my standpoint. I've never even brought Christianity into it.
Yeah.
This is all Muslim material.
Okay.
And what we're saying to Muslims, this is your material. You've got to deal with it.
Okay.
And we're the first ones we're the first ones that have introduced this to them. Now, they can take us to court on this.
Uh-huh.
The problem is we're just going to reiterate everything in this booklet, which means it will be the Quran on trial. It will be the traditions on trial. It will be the four schools of fiqh that will be on trial. And it will be Muslim scholars on trial, not us. We're purposely doing this because we find this is the most effective way to start whittling down and start the disillusionment.
That's
what
interesting.
What we haven't had done is this. No one's done this yet. No one has actually held Islam accountable with their own traditions, with their own authority. And you can't get any higher than the Quran and Muhammad.
So the kind of issues you deal with here, this one particularly, is on women and slavery in Islam.
Yes, we just did on Sunday.
And you've got other examples of these.
Yeah, we have one on Sunnah, we have one on Sharia law, we have one on apostasy. We have one. I mean, there's a whole one.
Jesus and Muhammad.
Jesus and Muhammad. Jesus and Issa.
And then you engage in a conversation when you give this material out.
We kind of jump to what we're doing now.
Sure.
What we're doing now, we realize that by far the vast majority of people that are going to be influenced by what we're saying on the ladder are on the internet.
Okay.
The people at the corner are there as a crowd. It's a rent-a-crowd.
Mm.
They react. We want that reaction.
Okay.
We're filming every one of that. We want the reaction. We want to see them get it. One of the things about Speaker's Corner that's unique, for the first time, you will see Muslims' private side. They'll see their private face. Listen, you go to any Muslim on the street, and you ask them, do you believe that Islam is violent? Oh, no, it's a religion of peace.
Mm.
Do you believe that Israel has a right to? Oh, yeah, it has a right to exist. Do you believe in democracy? Of course I believe in democracy. Do you believe that Muhammad is a man of peace? Yes, he's a man of peace. However, that's the public face that they want you to hear. And that's why everybody you meet says, every Muslim I know is peaceful. That's because that's the only side you're allowed to see. In order to get to the private face, to the real face of Islam, you need to get much deeper. Let's talk about what the Quran says in Surah 4, Ayah 34. Let's see what Muhammad did in Surah 33 with his wives.
let's just look at your material. Mm. Let's just open up. Let you read it. Mm. Even in Arabic if you want to. And I want you to react. Mm. Then you see the reaction. Mm. And that's the reaction we're not getting to. You can only get that at Speaker's Corner when they are in, because they are by far in ascendancy. They are the largest group down there. They're not on the ladder. Mm. They're all on the ground.
Right.
But it's about 10 to 1 Muslims to Christians.
Yeah.
So they feel safe to really show their real face. Now that gets filmed. That gets up on the internet. The whole world sees it. And they see them, yes, calling for the death to the apostates. Mm. They'll say almost any Sunday, asking, should apostates be killed? Every Muslim down there, almost everyone will say, yes, they should be killed.
Right.
Once you read it in the text.
Yeah, so in a sense, what you're doing is as much for the crowd who are watching online as it is for, obviously.
It's mostly for the ones online.
I mean, and there are a lot of people who, especially in the summertime, who come visit London, especially from Arabia or the Gulf states, who've never had a chance to talk to a Christian ever before. So they are also, we want to talk with them. So this is the only time they'll ever have chance for someone to challenge their faith and get them thinking.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it's to help them get thinking and self-questioning.
So there's an international crowd that gathers there. I mean, it's known, isn't it, as a place, I mean, across the whole week where anyone can stand up and have their say, and there's a lot of heckling and all that kind of thing. That's all kind of part of the, I guess, the atmosphere that's down there. But for you, it's almost like a stage that is beyond just London. It reaches beyond itself.
And it's their stage. They set the scene. It was the Muslims who, every Sunday afternoon, they went to Speaker's Corner and the Christians kind of left. Mm. So we decided, no, we need to go where they are.
Have you ever felt like the freedom that you experience there to challenge in such a robust way the Muslims who gather there has ever been under threat? Do you feel like Speaker's Corner, it's a bit of a unique place in some ways. Do you feel like anyone's worried about the kind of high octane kind of shouting that goes on down there? Or do you think it'll continue?
Well, let me give you a story. We hope so. It all depends on how the government really responds to this, and if they allow us to continue to have free speech. But I'll give you an example. Just two Sundays ago, I was on the ladder talking about women in Islam, and there was a Muslim missionary right in front of me, really
going for it,
and insulting us and debating us for about half an hour. When I got off the ladder, he came up to me, "Betty, you did really good today." And this is the man who'd just been insulting me for half an hour. So you see, you know, there was this there's a rapport there, even between some of those that are heckling us. So there's a good relationship.
Yeah. Okay. That's really interesting, though. And I do remember, again, when we did our documentary a while back, Jay, that you said, even though it can be quite full on down at the corner, that there's still a kind of almost funny camaraderie afterwards.
It's a real camaraderie. And this is something Europeans need to wake up and be careful of. They think if you raise your voice, you've lost the relationship. Mm. In an Islamic context, if you come from the Middle East, if you come from Asia, where most of these Muslims come from, here in Britain, Asia meaning India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh, if you don't raise your voice, if you're not passionate, you're not worthy to be talked to. The fact that we do are as passionate as they are, the fact that we show our passion, the fact that we're willing to go toe-to-toe with them, the fact that we're willing to die for what we believe enormously raises our spectacle. This is
the thing that a lot of people had a problem with when they heard that documentary. They were like, it doesn't sound Christ-like, because it sounds like people are getting angry and shouting at each other. But for you, there's a bit of a culture divide there between what Western Christians often think of as the right way. I would suggest they go back
and look and see what Christ did with Mediterranean. Mm. In a Mediterranean world, what did he do in the temple when he overturned the tables? Mm. Is that Christ-like? Ooh, wait a minute, that was Christ doing it. Or Matthew 23, when he was being engaged. And see, it's the engagement. Look at when Christ was in engagement with the Pharisees. Mm. Look and see how he reacted with the Pharisees. You den of vipers, you white sepulchers, you hypocrites, the whole way through. Is that Christ-like? Yes, it is.
Right.
And that's the side of Christ we have forgotten. But more than that, Muslims understand that side of Christ. I'm not there to persuade Europeans. I want the Muslims to be engaged. And why is it those same Muslims who are yelling and calling us all kinds of names then buy our tea for us and our coffee when we go to KFC?
Well, look, and I want to talk about lots of things in the second half of today's program. Before we get there, just explain. You've talked about Hyde Park Christian Fellowship as being the gathering that kind of regularly goes down to minister there in the corner.
That's the face-to-face engagement.
The face-to-face stuff. FANDER. Now, firstly, it's an odd name, P-F-A-N-D-E-R. Where's that from, and who was this FANDER?
Dr. Karl FANDER is my hero. He was a German scholar. in the 1800s who went out with CMS and caused so much furore wherever he went, whether it was in Istanbul or Baghdad or Calcutta and Agra, the debate he had in Agra, Peshawar. Everywhere he went, he was able to read and write in 8 different languages, but he would go into the marketplaces and do what we're doing at Speaker's Corner.
I see.
Just speak, putting the Quran and Bible against each other, putting Jesus and Muhammad. He did those 4 things, compared the Quran to the Bible and Jesus to Muhammad. No one else had done that. He was the first to do that in the public sphere. And he got so many people that came to the Lord because of that, that he became such a thorn in the side of the Muslims in India that they finally demanded he do a debate, which he lost. The debate he lost, though he didn't lose it. It was Valpy French that lost that debate. Uh-huh. But because of the material in that debate, which was came out of one book called Mizan al-Haq, Balance of Truth in English, that one book has brought more Muslims to Christ than any other one book in the Indian subcontinent. And all it does is do those 4 things. So that's all we're doing. We're only interested in confronting the Quran and Muhammad and defending Jesus in the Bible.
Fantastic.
The Book of the Man. The Book of the Man.
We'll talk in the next section about the fact that you're taking on the mantle now, taking Fanda forward. But where can people find more about Fanda? Is it available online?
Yeah, we have our website launched a month ago, fanda.uk, and we have courses that people can take. People can email us at our centre, info@fanda.uk, and we're building resources. We're available for Christians if they have any questions to do with Islam and confident Christian engagement.
Fantastic. Yeah, so it's www.fanda, and that's FANDER.uk. If you want to go to the website. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back talking about what's going on in terms of ISIS and that kind of Islamist movement across the globe, and also talking about the new challenges to Islam that people like Jay and Beth have been bringing to Muslims. So do stick with us. This is Unbelievable. I'm Justin Brierley with a special sort of valedictory, really, for Jay Smith before he returns to the USA here on Unbelievable. I do hope you can stay with me. Well, no need to dream about it. If you live in the state and you can make it to California, why not consider dropping into a church, specifically Church Every Day in Northridge, California, on Saturday the 27th of August, where we're going to be recording Unbelievable Live. Yes, I'll be hosting our first international edition of the programme with an audience present, as I'm joined by atheist Ryan Bell and Christian Sean McDowell. Both will share their stories, why I'm an atheist, why I'm a Christian. Sean is a Christian apologist, and Ryan lost his faith after embarking on a year without God, which went viral at the time on the Huffington Post. They'll be discussing with me faith, reason, and the search for truth. I'll also be sharing some of my own experience in 10 years of hosting Unbelievable, and we'll be taking questions from the audience. If you can't make it, you'll be able to hear the recording in September on the podcast. But if you can be there, I'm really looking forward to meeting American Unbelievable listeners, both Christian and non-Christian, at this unique event being put on in partnership with Truth Matters Ministries. It's free to attend on Saturday, the 27th of August. The doors open at 6:30 p.m., but please register at the website truthmattersministries.com or search for Unbelievable Live on eventbrite.com. See you there.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Welcome back to the second part of today's Unbelievable. I'm Justin Brierley. This is the show that has conversations that matter every week, dispensing with the usual format this week of a Christian and a non-Christian. Got 2 Christian guests joining me, but they debate regularly with non-Christians, namely Muslims, on a week-to-week basis in different kinds of formats. And we've been hearing about some of the things that go on down at the Speaker's Corner in Hyde Park. It's Jay Smith and Beth Grove from Fanda Apologetics who are with me today. Beth described in the last section of that programme a little bit about what Fanda is about, and Jay about the person it's sort of based on, and the fact that they do these robust debates with Muslims. They want to get the material out, and we'll get to some of the most recent material in a moment, guys. If you're listening and you'd like to respond to anything you hear on today's show, you're welcome to send in your emails, of course, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. And don't forget that after Unbelievable, you can hear The Profile. That's between 4 and 5 this Saturday afternoon. A leading Christian in some walk of ministry, faith or life is going to be telling their story. Let's get back into talking about what you've been doing, what you're planning to continue to do, Jay, as you go on. I had this ministry here for now 24 years or so in the UK, but you felt the time's right to move on. Now, as happens in some of the circles you move in, I've seen some Muslims online saying, ah, Jay Smith, he's finally realised he's failed here. He's not won any converts, and he's going back to the US with his tail between his legs. That's probably not quite the way you see it, is it, Jay? What is, in fact, why are you leaving the UK now, and what's next on
Well, yes and no. And there is some truth in that. I think after 24 years, I have realised that Europe is not yet ready for polemics.
Okay.
But the good thing about it is we've started, Beth and I, and two others have started a new organization at Fander, you're talking about, but the Fander course. We've taken 24 years of experience, and we now have 8 teachers, and we've put together an entire 42 lessons. That's okay. 42 lectures, two-hour lectures that start from September and go through July to train up people all over the world. It comes to you. It comes to your laptop, wherever you are. This last year, we trained up 85 people in 15 different countries, all from here in London.
Wow.
They didn't have to come to London. We went to them every Wednesday night. Now, this is something that we've been working towards. We finally put it together. It's now finished. It is now packaged. And now we can do it year by year by year.
Okay.
So if anybody is interested in this, they just need to go to info@fander.uk.
Okay, just to email you there.
Just email, and we'll send you out the brochure. This is only for Christians.
Okay.
This is not for Muslims.
Sure, sure.
But this is to show Christians how to engage apologetically and polemically. So we do both end. That's 84 hours of material. A lot of material. Huge amount. Much of it is this new historical material as well.
Well, we'll come to that. I mean, I've been talking about you going back to the USA. Now, that's not quite true. You're actually going globally, really, aren't
They've
you?
Asked me to go all over the world. Well, I'll be in 43 countries because so many other countries need this material. We're the only ones that have really... There's no school in the world that teaches it. There's no Bible school, not one seminary that teaches what we teach at Fander. This has all come out from 24 years of engaging at Speaker's Corner every Sunday, week to week, face to face with Muslims, seeing how it works, redoing it, retooling it, and then also repackaging it so people can use it in their own locales.
So you're planning on going to places like India, Africa.
Especially India. We're already in Ethiopia. We'll be in South Africa, but we'll also be in Zambia. We're already in Brazil. We're training 18,000 pastors in Indonesia. We have 2,800 people just last year that we trained up in India. So that's really where we're going to spend a lot of time. It's where they're ready to go for polemics.
And for you, it's really about equipping others so that this can be a movement that
kind of
expands.
This is polemics, the opposite of apologetics.
Right. I mean, describe to me what this distinction is between polemics and apologetics.
If you like, it's the two sides of evangelism. Apologetics, defense of the Christian faith. Polemics, challenging false ideologies or other ideologies, as 2 Corinthians 10 verse 5 says, where it sets itself up against the knowledge of God. So it's the two sides of evangelism. And we want to help the church, if you like, and empower the church to be able to both defend and ask critical questions of other religions so that other people begin to think through their ideologies and then consider Christ. And so we don't leave people even with Muslims, we don't just throw the question and just leave them there. We also always introduce Jesus Christ as the alternative.
Sure.
And so it's just to bring boldness back into the church, especially when it comes to Islam. There seems to be something about Islam that makes everyone cower. And we just want to see the church just stand up strong. We have a real message to offer. It really is the antidote to Islam. And we just want to be able to give that opposite message to what Islam teaches.
I mean, there are people out out there, Christians as well, who see you guys as kind of extreme in the way you
know,
do things.
There's less and less Christians. Over the last few years, there's been a real change. When I started, I started going to Speaker's Corner 16 years ago. And yes, there was a lot of hesitancy, especially in the British church. But we have seen a real change in the last few years.
Okay.
It's possibly ISIS. It's possibly radical Islam. It's made itself so known on the world stage. And we're finding church members all over the country from all sorts of denominations are contacting us and seeking us out for help and for training. And so we're seeing a shift even in the British church.
That's interesting.
But let me just make one caveat on that. There is a problem still in Europe. Europe has not. Europe is still clutched in fear. There is a political correctness here that is incapacitated anybody from asking anything critical of Islam. And that's why I'm going to be heading much more towards Asia. Asia, they don't have the problem with this. I remember asking last October when I was in India, why is it you guys can do a debate there in Chennai? They did one debate one day. It was supposed to be 13 days. It only lasted one day because the Muslims gave up after one day. And in one debate, 300 Muslims gave their life to Jesus Christ in just one day.
Wow.
Using historical criticism. And they said, Mr. Smith, you got to realize in Europe, you've only known about Islam for about 40 years. Really, Islam's not been here in a big way, except in the last 40 years. We've had Islam here for 1,400 years. More than that, they've dominated us. We know exactly who they are. We know where their weaknesses are. We just don't have your material. We need your material. Help us with this new academic material, but let us do the debates.
Yeah.
We have no problem with political correctness in India. And that's why, in some ways, it's not that I'm giving up on Europe. I'm saying let's go to where the debaters are.
Yeah.
Let's go where we already have. And not only a eloquent English-speaking crowd, they already know and want to take Islam down. And my interest right now is to destroy Islam. And I say that everywhere.
I mean, that sounds so, in a sense, combative, Jay. You know, I want to destroy Islam.
So absolutely.
And I guess I have to challenge you. In what way do you do that in a way that is Christ-like, that is loving? Because it sounds like you're going in there kind of to batter and...
I see the same thing Paul did when he went into synagogue after synagogue in Berea and Laodicea and Cappadocia in Ephesus. What did he do? He didn't make relationships. Did he make one friendship with anybody? He went right in and blasted them with what they had done to the Messiah. And what did they do? They threw him out. Many times they threw him into prison. Many times he was beaten. Twice he was almost stoned to death outside the city walls. And that's what I think we need to get back to. And I think we also need to get back to Matthew 10. If you want to talk about Christ, look and see what he said to the 12 there. I'm sending you out as lamb before wolves. You're going to be hated. If we're not being hated, we're not preaching the gospel. You're going to be persecuted. You're going to be jailed. You're going to be flogged. You're going to be killed. Those are the five things he promised every one of the disciples. They were all hated. They were all persecuted. Everyone was put in jail. They were all flogged. And every one of the disciples was killed except for John. Why do you get killed and hated and flogged and persecuted unless you're confident?
Are you prepared for the possible personal danger you'll be putting yourself in going to some of these
absolutely
places?
And my wife knows I'll probably will be killed. And I don't see that as even a question. See, that's a European question. That's, you're typically European asking that question. When I ask my Indians that, they say, well, bring it on. We'll just be with the Lord that much quicker. And I think they've got that attitude that the first century had, that Jesus had, that the disciples had. I don't see Paul asking that question. I don't see anywhere in the New Testament where you can see anybody, wait a minute, what about if we're going to be killed?
Just what Jay was saying there about 300 Muslims turning to Christ on the basis of hearing this material, that's astounding to me. But I have heard many other stories. In fact, we published one in our magazine recently about Muslims coming to Christ around the world. You know, if you go down on the corner, you may not see that many people apparently, you know, turning to Christ. Have you seen examples where people have converted here in the UK, and what do you think is actually happening globally when it comes to Islam and Christianity?
There is a lot of Muslims who are getting disillusioned with Islam, partly because they see what's happening around the world with ISIS and groups like that are going back to their text, back to Muhammad, going back to the Quran and implementing it. And this is the real deal of what Islam actually teaches when you base it on its core foundational texts. And so you have Muslims getting disillusioned, you have a lot of Muslims who are beginning to seek, and you have quite a few Muslims coming to Christ. On our team, one of our colleagues has led over 100 Muslims to Christ, and probably altogether 200 Muslims to Christ in the last year or two.
Just one year, she led 125. Three imams she's brought to the Lord using polemics.
Using apologetics and polemics. And so
this is
working.
This is
here in Britain.
All around London.
What? Now, every one of those apostates we've had to rehouse and relocate because their lives often are in danger.
Why don't we hear about this more then? Is it just because
Justin, once what would happen if we were to tell you where these people are,
well,
or
sure,
who they are?
Of course.
This is the only religion when you become an apostate. That's why you want to look on, go up on Vander Films and look out on our video on apostasy. Every Muslim knows that if you become an apostate, you're given 3 days, possibly 10 days to recant. Mm. If after 3 or 10 days you don't recant, in all 4 schools of law, you must be executed. Can you see why we're not bringing these people forward?
Sure.
Well, we could show you. We could tell you who they are. We can, if you want to see them personally, but we don't dare bring them publicly. Because even here in Britain, we have one woman who has had to move 46 times because her father is an imam in northern England. She has had to move 46 times because her father's trying to have her killed here in Britain. And what has the British government done to protect her?
This then brings it out of the slightly theatrical scenario that you might be tempted to view Speaker's Corner in. And this is real life and death stuff that you're actually dealing with.
Basically, we know in our ministry, we're leading people to a faith out of one religion into Christ, where we know that they could lose their lives. And so we as a team, we have to be ready to help empower and equip ex-Muslims to actually be willing to give up everything. And that's a hard deal, but we then become the family for them.
I mean, it's almost like it has to be really worth it for them to go through that kind of...
Absolutely. And so if we were to give a wishy-washy Jesus to them or wishy-washy Christianity, there's nothing attractive about that.
Sure.
For them to leave everything behind, they need to see a strong, bold, robust Christianity. And we've had ex-Muslims or maybe Christians who've lived in the Muslim world for many years who've suddenly seen what we do or they've done our course and they're in tears because they are just so thankful that finally someone is standing up to the religion that they have suffered under.
What do you see as the difference that is made? I mean, obviously these people now kind of have to go undercover in hiding and so on, but in a personal sense, what would you say the difference is when a Muslim, maybe even someone who has been a cleric in Islam, comes to faith in Jesus Christ?
Well, two things. First of all, they have eternal life forever, which is the ultimate Christian goal.
Which is always a bonus,
They're going to be with God forever. You see, in Islam, even in Islamic theology, and this is where Muslims haven't thought it through, but even according to Islamic theology, a Muslim will never be with God, even when they die. And so even in Islam, they even never get to God in their theology. But that's the whole point of Christianity is to actually finally get to live with God in a very real way.
Yeah.
Mm. And so that's the first thing the Muslim gets. The other thing is we've seen lives transformed. We've seen ex-Muslims begin. Not that every Muslim is a bad husband or a bad wife. There are good Muslim husbands. Mm. But we have seen transformation in the lives of ex-Muslims because they follow Christ now. And he has redeemed them and transformed their lives. They become better husbands, better fathers and so on, better mothers. And also they belong to the family of God. Mm. But what we want to see in Fander is to see them come to maturity.
Yeah.
I'd love to see some of them be willing to go back up on stand on ladders and start preaching again.
Yeah.
And there
yeah.
are a few that have got to that point.
Right.
But that can be quite a journey to
of
get
course.
Them to that place.
Yeah.
Can I say something else? Remember what we talked about in the last part of this program? We talked about putting things up on the internet.
Mm.
There's a reason we're doing that. What we're finding, as I've been traveling around the world, in South Africa, I had someone tap me on the shoulder, turn around, "You're Jay Smith. I am so blessed by what you're doing on Vander Films." Just a few weeks ago, I won't tell you the airport, I was in an international airport, I was in a store, the guy looked at me and he says, "Are you a celebrity?" I said, "No." "Have you been on TV?" "No." "Do you do talks?" "Yes." "Are you Jay Smith?" And he came and hugged and hugged and hugged me, came running around, hugged and hugged. "It's because of you I'm a Christian today." I was at a debate here in London not too long ago. Someone tapped me on the shoulder. Turned around. "You're Jay Smith, aren't you? May I just shake your hand? I'm a Christian today because of one video I saw of yours."
Wow.
So now this is the fringe benefit. We may never see these people. Mm. We may never come across them. Mm. But it's the fact that we're getting these all over the world now, that people are coming up to us because of that robust confrontation. We had a couple that came from, I forget it was Lebanon. They were down maybe a few years ago. They came down to Speaker's Corner. They were on their honeymoon. I had just done 4 debates, half-hour debates. I was leaving the corner. She came up to me in tears, just took my hand and started stroking it. And she says, "We have never felt more proud to be Christians as we are today, seeing what you did on the ladder." She says, "We've never seen this before. Could you please come to Lebanon and do what you just done?" I said, "No, this can only be done in England, and this can only be done at Speaker's Corner. This is unique in the world."
Yeah.
But be confident. This is a Christian couple who had never felt, had never seen this robust Christianity that we see in the New Testament, this robust Christianity that Paul used, that the disciples used, that Jesus used, that we no longer are using here in Europe.
Obviously, the polemics and the apologetics is obviously having this amazing effect then. Yes. Are you seeing other things happen to win people to Jesus as well? I mean, I hear talk of, in some parts of the world, Muslims seeing Jesus in dreams. We hear of, obviously, other forces that are making Muslims reconsider, whether it be violence from ISIS and those kinds of things. What would you say are the other factors that seem to be drawing people to
Certainly
Christ?
A lot of Muslims do have dreams. It's not usually the thing that brings them through. It's it's the thing that gets the ball going.
Okay.
And they usually need to meet a Christian somewhere along the way. Of course, people are responding to just good Christian love, which you know, service and good Christian love. Through the supernatural, there are healings that happen around the world. And it's almost as if you think about it, the Christian message has not been free to move in Muslim countries. And it's almost as if God has to supernaturally minister to people to get their attention, because there's not that many open Christians in those lands.
And this is my next question, in a sense, is where you are seeing Muslims within predominantly Muslim countries converting. Now, it's one thing to convert here in the UK and you can have the death threat on your life. In another country where you're maybe surrounded by Muslims, is it inevitable that those who do convert are kind of maybe going to keep it under wraps? You've got this sort of phenomenon, this so-called, I can't remember
insider
the name,
movement.
For insider
we,
movement.
We have
so
nothing
on.
To do with the insider movement. We absolutely think it's a heretical movement because of syncretism.
Yeah.
Because it's the idea of when a Muslim begins to show interest in something Christian, although they don't call it Christian in those circles, show interest in Jesus, what they'll do is the people who are reaching this Muslim will keep the Muslim as a Muslim. So they pray like a Muslim, they fast like a Muslim, they live like a Muslim, they stay a Muslim, they call themselves a Muslim, but they just honor Jesus as well.
Right.
And it's just a real syncretistic movement, and it's very dangerous. And the statistics coming out of that are very suspect.
Okay.
But what we see, we have contact with church pastors, indigenous church pastors in those same very same lands, where they are begging these Western movements. It's primarily come out of America. They're begging these Western missionaries, stop bringing this insider movement to our land. We're already here as established churches. I'm an established pastor. Let us reach the Muslims.
Yeah.
And they are seeing people come out of Islam into Christ. And I think what it is as Christians worldwide, we have to be ready to extract Muslims out of Islam. I mean, that's what the Bible says. Put off your old self and put on the new self, which is the mantle of Christ, and to become Christian.
And there still is that challenge that, yes, it may cost you.
It will cost you everything.
Yeah,
yes.
And Justin, this is a huge subject you're bringing up, and we could do a whole another hour just on this. But I think it's a good question you're asking. Is there some place for contextualization? Yes, there is. As long as it's cultural contextualization. Where the heresy that Beth's talking about is when you go theological contextualization, when you really haven't left the theology of Islam, when you still continue to remain in the Quran, when you still continue to believe that Allah and Yahweh are the same God, when you still continue to believe that Isa and Yeshua are the same Jesus, or you believe that the prophetic line includes Muhammad, that's where you've got the theological, you've gone too far. And at that point, once the missionary leaves, if there are missionary, what do you think that person's going to become within 1 year? They'll be moved right back into Islam.
Right.
So what's the purpose of even movement are there? There are no movements that are moving that direction. In almost every case, at some point, they've got to extract.
Okay. Let's talk before we have to finish up our time about some of this new material that you think has really been devastating, in your opinion, the Muslim debaters. This is all about the historicity of the Quran and
Muhammad.
And Muhammad himself. Yeah. So just in a nutshell, give us a sense of what this material is all about.
Islam is absolutely dependent on two things. One man named Muhammad and one book called the Quran, the book of the man. We are also dependent on two things. One man named Jesus Christ and the book called the New Testament, the book of the man. So we start from the same paradigm. That's why we understand why Islam is so formidable and why it's growing so fast and why the rest of the world outside of Christianity does not see what's happening and why so many Muslims are moving towards the right and following that book and following that man. Now, how therefore are you going to confront and destroy that book and that man? Well, you can't do so by legislation. You can't do it with bombs, bullets, and cruise missiles, because the ideology based on that book and the man cannot be destroyed by weapons of this world, as Paul said. So what we're saying is, hold on a minute, why don't we go back to that book and apply the same historical critique that was applied to our book in the 1800s, which devastated the church by 1905, and the church has never really recovered here in Europe. The rest of the world, it has, because we have gone back and found answers to every one of those criticisms, redacted criticism, source criticism. You've had many great men here on this radio show defending just those criticisms, and we're pretty much on top of it now. Those are now being applied to the Quran, and this is what we're finding, Justin. Now, I'll try to do it in a nutshell.
Sure.
We can't find any reference to a man named Muhammad from any Arab sources until 691. He died in 632. We can't find any reference to any religion called Islam until 692. He died in 632. We can't find any people called Muslims until 692. He died in 632. We can't find any reference to a city called Mecca until 741. Muhammad died in 632. Supposedly was born in that city. Now, can you see immediately what I'm showing you? We've got a real problem here. There's 60 years of a gap. Muhammad is well known. Yep. There is reference to him outside of Arab sources. Sure. There are Arabs who are defeating and destroying Basra, Baghdad, Damascus, Jerusalem, and Cairo, but they don't call themselves Muslims, nor do they follow a religion called Islam, nor do they have a book called the Quran, nor are they following a man named Muhammad. Now, that's problematic right there. What we are finding is that almost all of the geographical references in the Quran, 65 of them, take a look and see where they all fit. They don't fit Mecca. Not one of them. If you look at the geographical references, this character, this messenger, who's only referred to four times in the Quran as Muhammad, but he's referred to as a messenger, representative of God all the way through, who lives in a place of the prophet, but doesn't say the name. We do know that he has contact with these people from Thamud 24 times, these people from Ad 23 times, these people from Midian 7 times. Ad, Thamud, Midian. Take a look and see where Ad, Thamud, and Midian are on the map. They're 600 miles further north. If he's having daily contact with them, how could he go up 600 miles and return 600 miles in one day? Unless, of course, he was on EasyJet. So you can see the problem here.
Yes.
In the 7th
yes.
century, this just doesn't make sense.
Okay.
So Dan Gibson in Canada, who is an archaeologist, spent 30 years in the Middle East. His father was an archaeologist. Decided to look at all the earliest mosques using technology, satellite technology, to look at where all the earliest mosques were facing. And he went to mosque after mosque after mosque in Syria, Jordan, as far away as Canton, Guangzhou in China. And guess what he found? Every mosque from the 7th century up until the 8th century, up until 725, so that's about basically 100 years after Muhammad's death. For the first 100 years after Muhammad died, every mosque is not facing Mecca. Not one of them is facing Mecca. They're all facing Petra.
Wow.
In Jordan.
Okay.
Everyone, uniformly. Doesn't matter whether they're on the west side or the east side. Doesn't matter as they're far away as China. They are all uniformly facing Petra.
Petra
in Jordan. Now look at Petra. Petra is the Nabataean kingdom. Petra is where Arabic comes from. We get Arabic out of the Nabataean script. Take a look and see what we know about Petra. Petra was the center of the Nabataean dynasty, the kingdom, from the 2nd century BC. But Petra was also where all the... it's a city of temples and tombs.
Yes, I've been there. The most extraordinary thing. You can still see them today.
It's a beautiful place.
These tombs and temples carved into the rock face.
According to the Quran and all the traditions, where this prophet lived was in a valley, was a parallel valley, had a stream going through it, had clay, loam, had trees, had olive trees. None of that fits Mecca. Mecca's not in a valley. There's no parallel valley. There's no stream going through Mecca. It does not have clay, loam, or trees, and certainly no olive trees. The only olive trees that exist anywhere are on the Mediterranean. Every one of those things exists in Petra.
How extraordinary.
Now, you've not heard this before, have you?
No, I haven't.
This is the first time you've come across. We've known about this since 2011. The historians are starting to put it together. What we now know is the black stone that's in the Kaaba, guess where it comes from?
From Petra.
Petra.
Right. Wow.
Now,
okay.
To unpack all of this, you're going to have me on for another hour.
Okay.
Because I'm going to have to show you how is it that the sanctuary was destroyed in Petra in around 687. 687, Zubair, Abdullah ibn Zubair, rebels against the Umayyads. But see, the Umayyads, here's people who haven't thought through. Who are the Umayyads and what are they doing way up in Damascus? Why aren't they down in Medina or Mecca? Why are they 1,200 miles further north? No one's thought this through.
You've opened the can on a huge area, which I would love to explore again at some point, perhaps.
Can you see now why Muslims don't want to debate this? I'll end with this.
Okay, yes.
If Mecca was that important, there should be some trace of some vestige of something ancient there. Look and see what they're doing in Mecca right now. They're building 62 large skyscrapers. The fourth largest, tallest tower in the world is now in Mecca. You look and see. Don't trust me. Look at all these cranes everywhere. Whenever you dig cranes for large towers, what do you have to do? You have to dig into the ground to put foundations. Whenever you build foundations in very important cities, especially historical cities, cities of importance like Damascus or Jerusalem, you have archaeologists there. Why are they there? To see if you come across any ruins. Sure. So they have archaeologists there in Mecca looking for any ruins. Guess what they found?
Zilch. Right.
Not a thing. Mm. I'll leave you with that.
Okay.
That should tell you what we're up against. This is why this is so exciting.
Well, I can tell it is, and I'd love to have you on.
If
we can find a Muslim scholar who's willing to debate you on
one
this.
One last thing. This is what Shabir Ali, we hung Shabir Ali on this. Look at the six major manuscripts. The oldest Quranic manuscripts, all six of them. That's the Topkapi, the Samarkand, the Husayni, the Ma'il, the Pachpalnis, and the Sana. Those are the six major manuscripts. Look and see when they're dated. Not one of them is from the 7th century. Not one of them is complete. Not one of them agrees with each other. And not one of them agrees with the Quran we have today.
Wow.
Now, those are the six oldest manuscripts in existence. They don't even begin to appear to 705.
So, you're looking at the historicity of Muhammad, of Mecca, and the Quran itself.
The three biggies. You're
taking them all on.
And then we're getting Allah.
And many of their practices. And
then
their practices.
Wait till we found out what we found out about Allah.
We're going to have to do a program on this for sure.
Wait till you find what we know about Allah. This is the biggie. But this is fun.
Is this available now, or is this something
you can go online?
And we teach it on our course, and we're writing papers. We're going to start getting up on our website. We're going to do videos. We're getting out at Speaker's Corner.
Just go up on YouTube and put the classical debate. Jay Smith versus Shabir Ali, September 2014.
Great. Go and check that out. I'll make sure there's a link to it as well from today's program. We're going to take another quick break, and then we'll finish up, guys, because I just want to talk about what you're hoping to do with FANDA and the High Park Christian Fellowship going forward in Jay's absence, Beth. But you're listening to Unbelievable. Today, Jay Smith and Beth Grove join me from FANDA, Center for Apologetics. If you want to find out more about them, www.fanda, that's FANDER.UK. We'll be back in just a moment's time. Meet the mission field on your doorstep in the latest edition of Premier Christianity magazine. From happy moral pagans and hipsters to alpha males and atheist memers, we'll introduce you to the new tribes who need to hear the gospel in the UK today. Plus, read our in-depth interview with the UK's former chief rabbi Jonathan Sacks, the ethics of boxing and mixed martial arts ahead of this summer's Olympics, post-Brexit news analysis, and practical ways to connect with God in your 9-to-5 job. All that plus news, reviews, and your favourite columnists. Subscribe today or request a free sample copy at premierchristianity.com/freesample. Welcome back to the final part of this week's edition of Unbelievable. I'm Justin Briley, bringing you conversations that matter between all sorts of interesting people every week here on Unbelievable. And this range of programmes on Faith Explored brought to you in association with Premier Christianity magazine. Haven't given that a mention for a little while, but I am the editor of the monthly magazine that brings you a wide range of features, news, reviews, interviews with all kinds of interesting people within the Christian world. And of course, is going to be featuring very soon in the September edition an interview with Derren Brown that I had. Derren Brown, well known as an illusionist, a mentalist here in the UK, huge following on TV and through his stage shows. And you're going to be hearing two programmes in which I'll be playing out my interview with Derren Brown after that. He's an atheist. He was a Christian at one time. We'll be talking about why he lost his faith, whether his manufactured miracles disprove the divine, and of course, whether there is evidence for the ultimate miracle in Christianity, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. So look out for that. That'll be airing on the last Saturday in August and the first Saturday in September. So lots to look forward to. And if you want to get hold of the magazine, premierchristianity.com and add /freesample to get hold of a free sample copy of the magazine. Next week, if you come back to Unbelievable, you're going to be hearing a conversation on whether belief in God is properly basic. It's a philosophical discussion on the ideas of Alvin Plantinga
in particular, a Christian philosopher. Atheist philosopher Stephen Law is going to be interacting with Tyler McNab, a Christian philosopher, on the idea that belief in God is something we can assume without necessarily having to have any argumentation or evidence. It is a properly basic belief. So as you can imagine, that doesn't always go down well in the atheist community, and we'll be hearing what Stephen Law has to say in response to it. Just a quick reminder as well that if you're a Christian and you love hearing these kinds of discussions and you want to hear, if you like, a more thoroughgoing explanation of some of the ideas we often look into on the programme, you might want to get hold of Unbelievable the Conference 2016 on DVD and MP3 CD. Over 12 hours of material there from 12 great speakers who were with us at this year's conference. So again, premier.org.uk/shop if you want to go and find where to buy it from. There's also a digital download option that we're putting up on the website, or equally you can find the links from today's programme, premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. I'll be speaking to Ben Virgo of Christian Heritage London very soon. First of all, let's finish off my conversation with Beth Grove and Jay Smith.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Well, as we complete our discussion today, we've had Beth Grove and Jay Smith joining me, Justin Briley, on the programme from Fander Centre for Apologetics. And as I've said, you can find out more at fander.uk. But it's been great to have you both on because, Jay, you're leaving the UK to take your ministry internationally, really, and hoping to see some amazing things happen in different parts of the world. Beth, you're staying here in the UK to continue the work that Jay has begun here. What are you hoping, Beth, going forward? Just in the time you've been doing this, the dynamics have changed, the things Muslims are and aren't prepared to debate have changed over time. What do you hope to see going forward now that you're in the hot seat here in the UK?
You know, we as a founder team, we're really growing very, very fast. Different people are coming on board, and different people are coming on board both in Britain and also overseas. And we're thrilled to see it's almost as if a movement is starting and growing. And there's a lot of people who they now want to engage the ideas of Islam. So as founder, we want to we are a resource for Christians to learn how to answer Muslims' questions, how to ask Muslims questions, and also how to understand what is behind the questions that Muslims ask, understand the way Muslims think and why they think the way they do, and why so often Muslims were imposed the view of Allah and so on onto Christianity and the Christian God. And so it's just equipping Christians to really understand everything that's happening in a discussion and conversation with Muslims. But we're also a resource for Muslims to come to for answers, for Muslims to come to engage with us, to write in or be at Speaker's Corner and to engage with us. Yeah. So we want to be available for both Christians and Muslims.
And let's just make it clear, you're not anti-Muslims.
No, we have a very clear tagline on our Twitter account. It says, "We confront Islam because we love Muslims." Mm. And so it's a two-pronged approach. It's truth and love, love and truth. And what you find is that a lot of Christians will love, say they love their Muslim friend, and in loving their Muslim friend, they accommodate everything their Muslim friend stands for, which is not biblical either. Mm. Or they'll love the truth so much, but they forget they're supposed to be loving those that they're communicating the truth with. But if you love Muslims with truth, you would dare to confront. You confront those that you love. If you see those that you love are going the wrong way, you will absolutely want to direct them to the right way and confront the false ideologies that they have. So it's truth and love together. And that's where Fander really wants to put to the world, internationally through our ministry internationally as well as London based, that we confront Muslims because we love them.
Great. Well, do go and check out Fander, fander.uk, if you want to find out more about the work that Beth is continuing here in the UK and the online classes and lessons that you're now offering and the material that you can find there. It's all available. You don't have to go down to Speaker's Corner to get educated in these things.
Justin, let me just make one
clarification.
Yes, please do. Very clear. I said we confront Muslims. Actually, let me clarify that. We confront Islam because
yes.
We love Muslims. We make a distinction between the religion and the people.
And the people.
Yeah.
I think that's really important. Important to say as we close out the programme. And I guess, Jay, you sometimes get painted as this kind of ebullient character, and you've kind of had to learn to have a very thick skin over the years, and you've had to learn how to kind of give as good as you get. I know that when you began, you didn't have this deep booming voice that you have now. You've kind of developed that over time, haven't
That's
you?
That's Speaker's Corner, yeah.
But do you feel like your time in the UK has prepared you for this
next stage in what you're going to be doing next?
Yes, and I feel this is a good time to leave because there's a good team here. We have eight teachers I'm leaving behind in capable hands of Beth. And she is much more approachable than I am for the British mindset. I need to be used in other places where they're ready to go and to really to use the polemics. I'm a polemicist before I'm an apologist. And I think because of that, it's important that people not only learn not to get beyond this fear, but to take every question that the Muslims throw at us and infuse the gospel into it. And that's where Beth and the other team are best at. So use them. Have them on the radio. And God bless you for it, because we're going to be not only hearing you from around the world, I'll be coming back to London all the time.
Well, look, you have to tell me when you're coming back, and we'll get you back in studio.
We'll have a roaring debate.
We'll hear about
this new material.
We'll hear about your adventures, and we'll have some debates. Brilliant. Thank you so much for coming in today. And I just want to, again, tip my hat to you, Jay, as the first person. I remember the first time you came on this program, and I never had a response to it like that before. And I was like, okay, we're getting this guy back on. It happens every time. So thank you very much for your ministry. Thank you, Beth, for taking up the mantle as well.
And Justin, thank you for even giving us this type of platform.
Well, you're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you very much. If you're listening and you'd like to get in touch with the program today, I'm going to give you the ways to get in touch in just a moment's time. And of course, all the links to my guests and of course that documentary that we talked about earlier on in the show available from today's webpage. Go to premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Well, during the month of August, I'm airing some interviews that I've had with interesting people at the end of each Unbelievable show and holding off on feedback until September arrives. However, you can still get in touch with your thoughts on today's programme, and I'll try and make sure to fit them in once we start reading some of that out again. Unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Be interested to hear what you thought of today's show. At UnbelievableJB and Facebook.com/UnbelievableJB for the Facebook and Twitter accounts. And just a quick hello to Alan Sadikovic, who got in touch on Facebook, says he's just finished listening to the 2012 backlog. Just three more years to go. One of those people who's obviously discovered the show and decided to go right back to the beginning and listen in sequence. He says, a suggestion, if I may, some of the shows could be remastered in light of new discoveries in the past few years, preferably with the same guest. Just one example is on page 21 of your backlog, the double show on pornography. In this year alone, there have been at least two studies that came out in the US, clearly pointing to the damaging effects of pornography. It'd be interesting to hear reactions on the affirming side in light of those studies. In all, great job so far. Keep cranking them out. I will do, Alan. Thank you for getting in touch. Well, it's a delight to be joined in the studio now by Ben Virgo. And Ben is one of the people who are responsible for Christian Heritage London. And if that name rings a bell, it's because I had Greg Kokel on the show a couple of months ago because he was due to do an event with Christian Heritage London. In fact, the same day as Unbelievable the Conference. Of course, both those events were happy to coexist in London on the same day. And did you have a good day with
Greg? We had a lovely day of sunshine because we also do walks in the City of London, taking people through the Christian history that's in the city, listing huge names, giants of church history, such as John Wesley and William Tyndale and John Newton, William Wilberforce and so on. So it was a delight to not only be taught, but to consider the impact of the gospel on the city on one day.
Now, some of our more astute listeners might wonder whether you have anything to do with other Virgos in the Christian world, Ben. You are in fact, part of the Virgo dynasty. Your father being Terry Virgo.
Yes.
Who, of course, founded the New Frontiers Church Network.
Yes, that's right.
So, obviously, you come from Christian stock. What journey would you say your own kind of journey has taken you on thus far, just briefly?
Yeah, very interesting. I myself was raised to believe the gospel, but was rebellious as a teenager. I contracted viral pneumonia and pleurisy at the age of 14 and nearly died.
Wow.
And I kind of used that as an excuse to rebel against the gospel. I remember seeing people raising their hands in worship on Sundays afterwards and despising their apparent blasé attitude, knowing that I had suffered intense pain, including an operation for which the anaesthetic didn't work.
Right.
So I was in great pain, and I remember, and I was crying out to God, "Oh God, help me!" And I thought, you people don't know. And I used it as an excuse to essentially join in with my unbelieving friends. But then, do you know the name John Wimber? Of course,
you know John. Yes.
John Wimber, when I was 19, he had a conversation with my dad in which he said, how is Ben?
Mm.
And my dad said, well, not great. And he said, is he interested in music? And my dad said, he's only interested in music. I was in two bands at that time. Mm. So he invited me out to, they had he called it the best Christian rock band in America at their church at that moment. Would Ben like to tour America with this band?
Wow.
So my dad came home and said, would you like to tour America with a Christian rock band? And I heard, would you like to tour America with a rock band? And that, for most young people interested in music, that was, I don't know if it still is, I presume it still is, that was considered to be, well, that's the point.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I went with them. This extraordinary band called The Violet Burning. They were fantastic.
I remember The Violet Burning.
You remember The Violets?
Yeah. There you go.
They were at Vineyard.
Yeah.
They had this extraordinary musical skill.
Yeah.
They were brilliant musicians. And they've gone on to, the guitarist, Sean Tubbs, is still recognized as a great session musician. But what would happen would be night by night, they'd be playing these great songs and they would be worshipping on stage. And you would see people in the audience were struck.
Yeah.
And then the singer would just start to talk about the cross. And he would say, you know, you've probably seen a picture of Jesus on the cross. And he looks like he's fallen asleep. He says, this is what the Bible says. His face was marred more than any man, beyond human likeness. Like men, one from whom men hide their faces. He was despised. And he says, and he would describe he wouldn't have to just say much more. It would just strike me. Because I think, you know, I need help. I think I might have done too much sin because I knew the gospel and turned away. But what you're describing is comprehensive. There is a battering that has happened to this man, which was never intended to be for just part of someone's sin.
Yeah.
This is a horrifying thing, which would be enough to save someone. And also, these guys in this band, they weren't pious. They were living on someone else's righteousness.
Yeah.
And they were lovely and gracious.
Was quite a transformative point.
Absolutely.
I was one
of the people who responded to the gospel.
Well, you've involved yourself now in Christian ministry, I know, involved in a church plant, in fact, in London.
Yeah,
but
you're
also very much involved in Christian Heritage London.
Yep.
So maybe we should talk about that. Christian Heritage, I believe, began in Cambridge. And it's very much, as far as I understand it, about presenting the gospel, but by showing the way Christianity has impacted and formed our culture here in the United Kingdom over centuries, really.
It does have that almost as a sort of by mistake element. And so one of the main part of our work is taking people on walks through church history. That's a central part of what we do. We also put on apologetics events and courses, various things. But we take people through the church history that's in London. And one of the things I say at the beginning of my walk, which starts outside St. Paul's Cathedral, is we're going to see on this walk the massive impact of the gospel on this city. By the time we've finished, you'll be seeing the fingerprints of the gospel all over the city. However, I always start with a quote from John Donne, because we're outside of St. Paul's Cathedral. He was dean there. And he spoke in that extraordinary sonnet on the Trinity. He says, I must have you, O God. He says, unless I am chaste, unless you ravish me. And there is a sense in which, yes, the gospel has done great things in London. But if we aim at the great things, we're seeking the gift rather than the giver.
Yeah.
And here's John Donne, who'd known terrible poverty, eight children, contemplating suicide. But then he becomes greatly successful, Dean of St. Paul's. He's seen both sides. And he says, I've seen riches and I've seen poverty, but there's only one in whom my soul is in comfort. I must have you, O God. So that's, as we see the people who've been preoccupied by that gospel, we do see great blessing in London through them. And I think that just speaks of what God is like, that the most famous verse in the Bible, God so loved the world that he gave. That's what God is like. He gives. Jesus says the kingdom of God is like a woman puts a little bit of yeast into the lump until the whole lump is leavened. So we do see wonderful impacts of the gospel, but we see it because firstly people have been preoccupied by the Christ of the gospel.
You work out of a centre in London where I think it's got a historic connection with Wesley and
That's
his conversion.
Right. That's
right. So you're already operating out of a historic kind of landmark site.
Amazing, yeah.
And so people, as I understand it, kind of walk through the doors, not necessarily Christians,
right.
people who are just interested in seeing the sights of London,
yeah.
and this might be one of them.
Yeah.
So where does the journey begin for them when they walk through the doors of Christian Heritage London?
Yeah, very interesting question, because a lot of people who come to us have found us on our website or have been recommended, and they want to come on a walk. They want to see the church history. But the people who wander into the building are interested in buildings.
Yeah.
It's a completely different crowd.
Yeah.
And what we used to do, we would say, people would put their head around the door and say, do you mind if I have a look? And I would say, well, go ahead. And I would hope that they would read some of our exhibition. Mm. What would actually happen would be 20 minutes later, they'd come back out the door saying, what lovely windows. So I think, what a complete waste of time that was. So now what we do is, everyone who comes in, I say, can I give you a five-minute walk, a little five-minute introduction to the building?
Yeah.
Of course. They'd love that.
Mm.
They put a pound in the box and they're getting a guide. Fantastic.
Yeah.
So what happens then is we tell them, we show them. We have the only painted window in the City of London in our building,
right.
at the very front.
Mm.
And so what we do, we show them, do you know what that is? That's the only one of its kind in the city.
Mm.
By then they're fascinated, because they're only interested in the building. Do you know what's happening in that window? That's Christ, the night before he dies. That's Jesus in the garden.
Mm.
And so we say, there he is. And it's called the agony in the garden. And the reason it's called the agony is, can you see what's written underneath it? It's the Ten Commandments.
Mm.
And of course, people now tend to think, oh, we all obey the Ten Commandments. You try reading them. Have no gods before me. Don't make an idol. Don't take the name of the Lord in vain. Keep the Sabbath. Honor your parents. Don't murder. Don't commit adultery. Don't steal. Don't lie. If you're not already uncomfortable enough, the tenth is, and don't even want to.
Yeah.
So we are condemned by the law. But having been condemned by that perfect standard, which most of us agree is a good standard, your eye goes up and you see him, the one person who kept that law on the night before he takes the punishment, so that we can be saved by faith in him.
Mm.
So now, Justin, everyone who comes in,
in
5 minutes, they hear the gospel. And then we talk about the building a little. So we've sowed the seed.
Yeah, yeah.
But we do have, you tend to find no two people respond to the gospel in the same way.
Yeah.
I had three people came in this morning.
Right.
Two of them were together. One guy was on his own. As I started to speak about the gospel, I'm speaking from the front, that one guy on his own literally turned on his heel and walked out.
Right.
You have other people well up. We've had some very famous visitors in the building.
Right.
One of whom everyone would probably know by my impersonation of him. I was once in the building and I was upstairs in my little office and I heard a voice. But don't you think that spirituality has been institutionalized in our time? I thought, I recognize that voice. He was talking
to
my... That
was a very good impression as well.
It was Ronnie Corbett. No, it wasn't actually Ronnie. But anyway, so my boss, hilariously, didn't know who he was. So I went downstairs and I got chatting to this guy. We talked for about 20 minutes. And at the end of that, we ended up, he said, so do we pray now? And I prayed for him. And we had a great time. And I sent him, he gave me his email address. It was funny, I sent him some Tim Keller sermons and so on. So we had so people who come into the building, we have told hundreds and hundreds of people the gospel who come in.
Isn't that fascinating? And obviously people who wander in, interested in the historical aspects and then realise there's a spiritual dimension to this history. I mean, and that's kind of obviously what you're doing with the walks, which is the meat, if you like, of what you do with Christian Heritage London.
That's right.
I mean, what are some of the key figures that you're going to be pointing people towards when if they go on one of your walks in and around London?
Well, our key walk is the one around our building. And on that walk, it's extraordinary, the list of people you can refer to, and we do refer to. So I've already mentioned John Donne. I like to mention John Wycliffe, who, of course, was instrumental in the Bible coming to us in English, although from the Latin. Then we'd go around the back of St. Paul's, and that's where they burned William Tyndale's New Testaments. William Tyndale, who was caught up in the Reformation.
Yes.
You can be saved by faith, he says, you know. And then, of course, you know how it is. If you get a revelation of grace, oh, I'm saved by his righteousness. And so the devil comes along and says, so his righteousness, you can do what you want now.
Mm.
And you think, oh, well, no, I can't. and then Satan says, you know, so it's not really his righteousness. And you think, oh, what? And William Tyndale, he found he said, I found it was impossible to establish the lay people unless they had access to the scriptures in their own tongue.
Yeah.
You need to have it explained how salvation works. You need to be able to understand the doctrines of salvation and so on. So he translates the Bible into English and then from Greek, and then they capture them and they burn them there. And we tell his story. Of course, he himself pays the ultimate price, is strangled and burned in Belgium. At the same site, is where they declare Luther a heretic.
Right.
So we talk about Luther.
Wow.
It's amazing. And I always get someone to get out a coin. And round a coin, round the Queen's head, it says Elizabeth D.G., by the grace of God, F.D. And that's Fide Defendor, which means defender of the faith.
Yeah.
Where did she get that from? Because Henry VIII wrote a book against Luther. And the Pope said, well done, Henry, you're the defender of the faith, which is hilarious. Because later, Henry uses
down,
Luther.
There you go. So people, they have this tour. They hear about the various characters and their faith. And presumably they don't have to be a Christian to go on the tour, necessarily.
No, in fact, it's the great asset that we have for London's churches is we want to give them a service which they can bring their unbelieving friends along to. Because you will find the walk is engaging and it's fascinating that everyone, I think people live in London for people have chosen to live in London. It's very expensive and inconvenient in many ways, but people decide to live here and not Hull or, you know...
Not that we've got anything against Hull, but...
We haven't got anything specifically against Hull.
For the listeners in Hull.
I'm trying to think of somewhere I could be so rude, couldn't I? But yeah... they could have lived elsewhere, but they decided to live in London. And I think that people they get a sense of there is something that has been significant here. And people, Londoners are interested in the history of London.
Yeah.
So we take them through the history and then we tell them. I take them to the church where John Newton used to serve, the old slave trader and hymn writer. I take them to the steps up which Wilberforce walked when he was in an agony of soul because he didn't know whether to become a minister or to carry on in Parliament. And Newton said, use your platform for the gospel, make a change in this nation. I take them. When people stand on those steps, it's funny because sometimes I want to say, okay, let's keep going. People just stand there. They don't want to move. There were awesome things that happened here. So unbelievers, they can't deny.
Sure.
But there's no point in which they have to bow the knee and pray a prayer.
But for you, do you feel like you're sowing a seed to kind of, I guess, remind people of the forgotten history of the way Christianity shaped our country, London, and so on?
It's almost accidental, the implication for London's history. And yes, we do like to talk about it, but we would want to to distance ourselves from a sense that Britain is somehow good.
Yeah,
I sometimes refer to the fact that yes, that we do have a stability in the country here, which isn't a mistake.
No.
But I don't then say that's because we are good as British people.
Yeah.
Funnily enough, just around the corner from us is the Museum of London, which is a wonderful institution. But they won't tell you the reason that we have stability here, the reason we have many things to which people flee from other countries to get is because people stood on the gospel. And like you think of someone like Shaftesbury, Lord Shaftesbury. We have free education in London. We didn't used to have that. Where was the profit then? Why did we do it? Oh, it wasn't for profit. It cost a lot of money. So why did we do it? Because of Shaftesbury. He was preoccupied by the gospel. He's caught up with the faith. And so, the gospel has gone like yeast into the lump.
Yeah. It's brilliant stuff. Thank you for coming in to tell us about it. People can find out about what you guys offer in terms of the walks and the courses and everything else at ChristianHeritageLondon.org. Do you feel like this is the kind of thing which you could see happening in other parts of the UK as well? I mean, it's not just London, obviously, that has a significant spiritual heritage.
Yeah. That's so true. And it is a real opportunity. I think of when my brother took an international visitor who had come to Brighton, he took him along to a back street in Brighton where there's a little monument to some guys who were burned at the stake in Brighton because of the gospel. And it had a huge impact. That's similar to when we take people to Smithfield. It doesn't half hit you when you think, well, of course, the question you ask is, how would I stand? But also it does say, there's something in the gospel we have here which is a treasure. Yeah. So yes, it does happen in other nations, other bits of London, of the country. Sorry, there's the Cambridge Walks, which are extraordinary. Mm. There's also a fantastic Christian heritage organisation in Lincolnshire, where there's amazing amount of Christian history. Yeah. They are Pilgrims and Prophets is their website, led by the fantastic Adrian Gray.
But this isn't just history for you. This is about what it means for us today as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think all the great church leaders of the past have said, I mean, did you know there was a time when there were three books required for each church? The Bible, Book of Common Prayer, and Fox's Book of Martyrs, which is still referenced now as a significant work of history. Mm. But if you don't know history, you're missing out on the heroes, the men of whom the world was not worthy, that Hebrews talks of, who have actually, who will encourage you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming in, Ben.
And, it is a privilege and an honour.
And if you're involved with a church in or near London and think this could be of benefit, why not consider booking in a party for Christian Heritage Walks? Indeed, you may be listening to this via podcast in another far-flung part of the world, but planning on coming to the UK at some point. Make sure you don't go through London without... meeting Ben and going on a walk with him, because it really is a really interesting, fascinating stuff. So thank you very much for coming in, Ben.
Oh, it's a real privilege to meet you, and I'm very impressed with all your work. So.
Well, thank you very much. ChristianHeritageLondon.org if you want more information.
You're unbelievable.
Is belief in God properly basic? We're having a philosophical debate next week. Stephen Law is an atheist philosopher. He'll be facing off against Christian philosopher Tyler McNabb. Join me again for the programme that aims to get you thinking every week. Unbelievable. The Profile is here next.